Who is it?
Come on, I got to deliver. It's kind of hot out here, buddy.
He's a comedian. His name is Michael David Rapoport.
Unprecedented access with Birdzilla, better known as the Birdman, Chris Anderson. It's championship night. Let's cut this. Come back to you guys.
Have you heard of him?
I'm not sure. I'm really bad with names.
Let me tell you something. If you're into sex stores or anything LGBTQ, do not go to Gaza.
And in the church that I used to go to, the pastor gave a sermon about why we have to support Israel.
And then they uncover this.
CBS News investigation has uncovered a loophole that allows accused and convicted American pedophiles to escape justice by moving to Israel.
Show me what Christians have done to Jews in the last 1,000 years, and show me what Muslims have done to Jews in the last 1,000 years. And you will...
We know there are many benefits to the use of black seed, according to the authentic statements of the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him. That's why I use the black seed by Tasneem, and 50% of the profits from your order will go towards establishing the Deen Center, the Masjid and Mega Dawah Center. Use promo code The Deen Show for 15% off. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to The Deen Show. How you guys doing? Welcome, welcome. I have a exciting guest here. He was with me online, and now he's in the studio.
This is The Deen Show.
Girl, I love you very much. I love all the work that you're doing.
When I was ready to talk about it, I would only talk to you.
And I was explaining how much respect I have for the faith of Islam.
Welcome to The Deen Show. The Deen Show.
I'm very excited to have Imam Tom. How are you?
I'm good, alhamdulillah. A little tired, short on sleep, like everybody, yeah. But it's been a good stay in Chicago. I was here for the Mass Ikhna conference, my first real time in Chicago, and I had a good experience, so alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah. So we have a lot to talk about. This next clip, I wanted to unpackage it because before this whole, what kind of steered us in talking to against the oppression that's happening in Palestine, mm-hmm. I was talking a lot about, and we were aligning with a lot of the conservatives and others who were seeing the infiltration of the schools with much of the sexualization of the children, the alphabet movement. And
Can you imagine? That was just like 3-4 months ago.
Right, you remember that?
That was the main thing going on.
Yeah. So there's this famous actor.
Who is it?
Come on, I got it delivered. It's kind of hot out here, buddy. Come on, Sparky.
What's up?
Nice house.
He's a comedian. His name is Michael David Rapoport.
Unprecedented access with Birdzilla, better known as the Birdman, Chris Anderson. It's championship night. Let's cut this. Let's come back to you guys.
Have you heard of him?
I'm not sure. I'm really bad with names. I'll have to see his face.
Okay. Does he ring a bell?
Yeah.
You know, this whole crap with this cancel culture and the... Shut up!
So, we're going to touch upon this topic because in his video he brings it up, but then he also brings up Gaza.
Interesting.
So, I want to get your reaction to this.
Okay.
It's very interesting. Again, he's an actor, comedian, and he's been very outspoken.
I'm here in front of the infamous MASH sex store right there, right here in Tel Aviv. Let me tell you something. If you're into sex stores or anything LGBTQ, do not go to Gaza. This doesn't exist in Gaza. This does not exist in Gaza. It doesn't exist in the West Bank. Okay, does not exist in Gaza. You go to fucking Gaza and you start talking that shit. You say, where's the LGBTQ bar? They toss you off a fucking building.
Your thoughts?
So is he being serious or is he being facetious or what's his sort of like thing with that? Because I mean like...
Is he joking or?
Yeah, I mean,
it seems like he's serious, but is he?
Because the thing is, and this is why it's interesting and important to notice how these different ideologies come together. And there's another related thing, and I'm glad that you brought up this particular issue because, to me, the LGBTQ issue in the United States and the Zionist issue in the United States are very similar. They have eerie similarities.
Mm-hmm.
How? Why? And there's two ways. One that's relevant to that video and one that's not mentioned but needs to be mentioned. The one that's not mentioned in that video is that the institutions that we have been completely sort of hijacked top down. So if you, there's a disconnect between what the American people want and what the government is doing. Okay. So if you look at, for example, when they were rolling, they were pushing through all these sexualization of curriculum and teaching, you know, gender fluidity in elementary schools and things like that, bringing in very, very, you know, pornographic books and stuff like that. The average American is against this. But the lobby, the movement that was for this, they maneuvered in such a way so that they basically were doing whatever they could do until someone told them that they had to stop. And so you see that they have powerful friends and powerful positions that know how to pull the levers and pull the strings. And then you saw the change on the ground. The same exact thing happens with Zionism in the United States. You've got politicians we've seen in the last month or two. Two Michigan Congress people were approached by Israeli-tied lobbies with an offer of $20 million to stop their race that they were going to enter into and run against Rashida Tlaib. And that's not any sort of endorsement for her, but we're just saying that this is something that there are politicians in the United States of America that are under foreign influence. They are in the pocket of a foreign government. And the average American would be against this. The average American is against this. How are we allowing this to happen? So I see a parallel, a really interesting and important parallel, that the United States government is not sufficiently in tune with the American people and what they want. And the American government has been captured by special interests. In one case, the LGBTQ lobby. Now we're seeing also with the Israeli lobby. And if people don't put a stop to it, then they're actually going to criminalize Americans for being against this sort of stuff. They're going to criminalize Americans for if you're against LGBTQ by saying this is hate speech and this is violence against LGBTQ people, which is ridiculous, which is sort of the conflation that he makes in the video. And then also, now they're going to say, if you're against Zionism, if you're against the state of Israel, you don't stand with Israel, then you're a terrorist or you're a terrorist supporter. So they're trying to criminalize us both ways. And the average American person, they are smart enough to realize that we're not for the sexualization of young children and we're against sort of the impositions of the LGBTQ movement. And we're also against our government basically following the interests of any foreign nation. In this case, it's Israel. But if it were any foreign nation, if it were Saudi Arabia, if it were Sudan, if it were any foreign nation, it would still be a problem. That's issue number one. Issue number two, what he's saying is that one of the things that Zionists are trying to use is the dehumanization and the vilification of Muslims and Arabs and Palestinians and Gazans in particular in order to justify their slaughter, right? So the person, and this is crazy because the person who is an IDF soldier who gets in front of the camera and is asked about and brags about killing babies or says, how many of you killed today? Oh, only two or two. It was a good day, which we've seen clips of people actually saying this. This is met with nothing, with no reaction whatsoever. And the possibility, not the reality, but the possibility, the imagination that somebody who's LGBTQ or whatever is going to be harmed in Gaza. It hasn't happened. The possibility or the suggestion that it might happen justifies killing 20,000, 30,000 people. Tell me how that math makes sense, right? So there's a deep, profound hypocrisy that's going on. And a lot of people, like I said, the biggest thing I think in right now, this moment for Muslims in the United States, they are going to attempt to criminalize us. They are going to attempt to come after us, to intimidate us, to bully us, to scare us, just like they've done in the past with, you know, other people. It's the new McCarthyism to try to say that you're a terrorist supporter. You support this, you support Hamas, whatever. No, we don't. We just want fairness. We just want the American government to be responsible to the American people. The majority of American people are against what Israel is doing. But the government is in the pocket of a foreign nation and their influencers and their money and their lobbies and their coordination. And it makes every single one of us who has a conscience sick. Because that's my tax money. That's your tax money. That's going to all these weapons and bullets that end up in the skulls of babies, right? So yeah, I hope I answered your question, but it's really, really an important moment.
What I was thinking, because he's Jewish, so you can still be, so obviously he's ethnically Jewish, but he can't make the claim that God gave him the land, if we go to that argument, because he's obviously supporting something that even his, if he's a practicing Jew,
right,
this is against the Bible. Yeah. This is against the first five books, well, or what they consider.
That ship has sailed long ago, right? Because Herzl and the founders of the Zionist movement, most of them were atheists.
They were atheists.
So they believe that God promised them the land, but they don't believe in God.
Uh-huh.
So how does that square?
Yeah, that was Ilhan Pape, I think it was. He's a Israeli Jewish historian. He also brings this up, that it's ironic that now they're atheists, Herzl and the rest of the founders, but they want to go ahead and capitalize off God giving them the land, but they don't believe in God.
Yeah, of course. No, that's why they rely upon demonization and vilification of Muslims and Arabs. They have to make us and the people of Palestine seem like they're animals, bloodthirsty, violent, all the to the end of it, to justify what they're doing.
I've seen some reports also where they have they've had people who have been convicted of pedophilia and then fleeing and capitalizing on the right of return and getting caught up. Have you heard of this?
I have heard of that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and it just doesn't make sense. I haven't verified all that stuff and gone into it deep, but
I'll play the clip.
First of all, I'm very sad to say, but Israel is a country which has a pandemic of sexual violence.
People get to see it, where the report, where you have reporters, and then they uncover this.
CBS News investigation has uncovered a loophole that allows accused and convicted American pedophiles to escape justice by moving to Israel. So Ian Lee has been following this for more than a year, and he traveled to Israel for this investigation.
Yeah. Yeah. No, just the fact, even without that, just the fact that someone from Long Island can hop in a plane and go to Tel Aviv and get citizenship and an AR-15 and military training and someone give them their house.
You are stealing my house.
And if I don't steal it, someone else is going to steal it.
Like, what world is this?
What world is this?
And then he can kill babies and then come back and resume his normal life in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, and this would be, I would have this position if this was any other country. This is not about Jewish or Muslim. This is not about whatever. This should not exist for anybody.
Is our slogan, can we say, what Islam teaches us, that all human life is precious?
Yeah, of course. Of course. And even the purpose of warfare, because every society believes in warfare, the purpose of warfare is to establish a just peace.
Yeah.
Right? So that's, if everybody understands the need to justify warfare.
Yeah.
If not, then they wouldn't lie about these sorts of things. They wouldn't lie about weapons of mass destruction for Iraq. They wouldn't lie about, the need to intervene, or Israel or the IDF wouldn't say that, oh, there's Hamas in this hospital, there's Hamas in here, there's Hamas in here. They wouldn't feel the need to justify it if there wasn't an implicit understanding that you need to justify violence. Everybody agrees. How do you justify violence? What violence is justified? Islam teaches that warfare has to be for justice and just peace. It's only because there are people in this world that are going to trample upon the rights of others and commit oppression and horrible things if they're not stopped. And anybody who's a student of American history, the American Revolution and everything, they understand that.
So would you be somebody who was, because that's something, even if you look at, I think it was Harvard University, they have a verse from the Quran.
Right.
Isn't it about justice?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head. But.
Yeah, and so being someone who's upon justice, would you be, as an imam, a community leader, if this was the roles were reversed right now, and you had, what is it? I think it's 23,000 innocent human beings right now. That's
Of course. Listen,
if these were on the other side, were Jews, would you 100%. Be out there to stop this?
When ISIS was having its thing, everybody was against ISIS. And we were talking about how un-Islamic ISIS was.
Yeah.
Right? That this is a travesty and an abomination and a rejectionism. And there's it's ironic because Israel has attempted to portray Hamas as ISIS, but the IDF resembles ISIS more than the other side.
Mm-hmm.
We were against this type of behavior, whether it's being committed by Muslims or it's being committed by Jews or by secularists or by atheists or by Christians. This is against our faith. And so it's not, and that's something that a lot of people don't understand, is that we're not just being partial here. It's not just because our own people, quote unquote, are, you know, in the crosshairs. This is something that is wrong, period. It's a moral wrong. And Islam teaches that you have to have the same standards for everybody, that you have to actually be fair. You mm-hmm. can't just have principles. Now it's all it was all about democracy and freedom fighting for Ukraine. And now with Palestine, it's the complete opposite.
Right.
That shows me that you're a hypocrite. You don't have principles, that you believe in your principles when it's convenient for you, when it suits you. And then when it doesn't suit you, your principles go out the window.
Mm-hmm.
I actually believe in principle. If you're going to support Ukraine, if you're going to say that the Russian aggression against Ukraine is wrong, then you also have to condemn Israel and the aggression against Palestine. There are very similar things. Many people have drawn the comparison between Bosnia in the 90s and Palestine. If you're going to condemn one, you have to condemn the other, right? Don't be the type of person that, you know, your sympathy and your justice only extends to history, right? It's like we're going through something right now. Now mm-hmm. is the time where people have to take a stand, and they have to be brave, because they're going to attempt to paint you as a criminal or a terrorist supporter or sympathizer or something like that, which is not true. But you have to stand up, and you have to say that this is not right. I want my government to stop it. I don't support it. And it has to end.
I've been showing this clip to many of my guests, and this is something we touched upon in our last program. But this is the narrative that's being pushed, and you'll see what I'm talking about in this next clip. And mm-hmm. this is by a former congressperson, mm-hmm. woman, and also a dean of a Christian university.
Mm.
So I want to get your feedback, because this is really fueling the narrative that they're trying to create.
We can no longer embrace this being Mr. Nice Guy to the people who are in Gaza, because this is over 1,000 years of mothers teaching their children, grow up and kill Jews, grow up and kill Jews. It's the minds.
Every accusation is a confession. That's all you have to say. And that's one of the most efficient phrases that we've gotten out of the last 3 months. Every accusation is a confession.
Have you heard this from?
Yeah, I saw it.
You've seen this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
this is recent.
Yeah.
They had a big convention, and you have a lot of conservatives, Christians come in. And now imagine that thousands of people are there, not just at the hall, but also at the event, but also now going out in the media, and people are hearing this.
Yeah, of course. It's just like Joe Biden getting up and saying that babies were beheaded and stuff like that. You know, once you spread the lie, and then what do you, right? You have somebody in your own community here in Chicago, a 6-year-old boy that got stabbed.
Off lies,
right?
Debunked.
Yeah, off of lies. That the damage is already done, right? So, I mean, again, like this, they rely upon the vilification and the dehumanization of Muslims and Palestinians and Arabs in order to justify the violence. But what we've seen is, what's in their imagination? How do they come up with these lies? They take the things that they're doing and they say that this is what Palestinians are doing, or that this is what Muslims are doing. There's so much evidence online these days compared to 20 years ago. You can go online, you can see videos of the yeshivas, right, and the schools in Israel and what they teach the kids. And they have asked them point blank, like, what does this make you want to do? It makes us want to kill Arabs. That's what they say, right? So every accusation is a confession. Like, you know, the Israeli state, from the Constitution, from 1948, from its inception, has been a racist state. It's been an ethno-supremacist state. It's been an apartheid state. Hate is built into it. Hate is built into the entire national project of Israel, right? And they need to project that hate onto Muslims, onto Palestinians, in order to keep on doing what they're doing, and to try to excuse their own butchery.
Now, if that was, I mean, that's coming from you now. A Muslim imam, you weren't always Muslim. You come from a Christian background.
Yeah.
I just want to go ahead and let the audience see. This is a clip. This is actually from a former Zionist. He was in the Special Forces, Israeli Special Forces, IDF. His father was an Israeli general, and his great-grandfather was somebody who helped to start the State of Israel. And this goes with what you're saying, coming from him.
Zionism is a racist ideology. The State of Israel is founded on a racist ideology. Israel is an apartheid, racist, violent regime that has taken over Palestine. That is how we need to talk about it. I didn't learn about Zionism in a college course. I didn't learn about Zionism from a book. My grandfather signed the Israeli Declaration of Independence. I grew up in Zionism. I know what Zionism is. And I reject it completely. You have to reject Zionism if you have a conscience. To be proud of being a Zionist? What else is he proud of? Being a pedophile? I mean, what is next?
Very important clip. And this is one of the things. It's like for any rational, critical thinking person, you have so many people that are defectors from the IDF, from Israel, Jewish people. Mm-hmm. You have Jewish Voice for Peace. You have other groups of Jewish people that say, not in my name, right? It's like you can't use anti-Semitism to cover the crimes that Israel is doing. Jews are saying this, right? You have Jews saying that this is entirely, you know, it's hijacking our religion. It's hijacking everything. It's completely unjust. Mm-hmm. What do you see? Do you see these sort of similar defectors from Palestinians? Do you see how many Palestinians do you see come out and say that, yeah, we were taught hate from day one, and only the one or two that they've paid a lot of money to, like the one guy, I can't remember his name, who's, you know, but, you know, look at the proportionality. Look at the wave upon wave of conscientious Jewish people and conscientious people who have experience in the IDF, who testify against its crimes, against its racism, against its oppression. And you'd be very hard-pressed to find any sort of equivalency when it comes to the other side.
How does that lay with you when you hear Michelle Bachrach, when she's talking about for over 1,000 years? So she's dating it back before, because this is relatively something new, 100 years, right?
Right.
So now she's talking about for over 1,000 years, they're teaching. So that means that you also, she's talking about Muslims basically hating Jews.
Yeah, it's you, an old
you
trope.
You obviously took a deep dive. You know, you didn't. It's not the popular thing to go ahead and just become a Muslim. So
right. You
coming from a background that you're a former Christian,
yeah.
correct?
Yeah.
Very intelligent. You know, you really looked at the evidence. Did you see any hint to that?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. In fact, the opposite. You know, like, and everybody in Palestine who actually remembers the time before 1948 understands this as well. There's even Jewish people. I saw one video where there was a Jewish lady. She was approached like in a hospital bed, mm-hmm. and they were asked, she was like very, very old, 80s, 90s, and were asking to describe what it was like before 1948. What was the relationship between the Jews and the Muslims? And she said, everybody got along. Everybody got along. And I met with Wael Halak, you know, a professor at Columbia University who's a Palestinian Christian or from a Palestinian Christian family. And he said the same thing. He said it was like growing up. He said, there was nothing. There was no sort of animosity. There was everybody got along, right? So this is an invention. This is another invention that Zionism has come up with in order to justify its slaughter. That they teach hate. They've always hated us. They are an existential threat, mm-hmm. right? It's the whole thing with weapons of mass destruction. You know, this is a preeminent strike or a preemptive strike rather, right? That we have to take away and kick them off of the land, or else they're going to come and they want to kill every single one of us, which is why they also go nuts with the from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free.
Don't say that now.
Because they think that they can only think within their imagination. Again, every accusation is a confession. They can, in their understanding, in the Zionist understanding, what would that mean? That would mean wiping out everybody and erasing everybody.
But obviously it doesn't mean that.
When
right?
Palestinians and Muslims say that, we mean we want freedom for everybody. Everybody who exists.
Everybody.
Yes, everybody. Jew, Christian, Muslim, everybody who's in between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea. We want liberation for everybody. But liberation does not look like Zionism.
Free from apartheid?
Yeah, free from apartheid. Free from a racist state. Free from Zionism. Zionism is bad for Jews too. Zionism is bad for Jews. It's bad for Christians and it's bad for Muslims. It's bad for everybody. It's only good for the few people who believe in the project and who are sort of trying to, you know, now you've got them systematically robbing houses in Gaza as they sort of destroy them and things like that. It's only good for the elite and the people who have put all of their sort of self-worth into this criminal ideology. But it's bad for Jews, it's bad for Muslims, and it's bad for Christians. So when we say liberate Palestine from the river to the sea, we mean liberate Palestine and the Jews and the Christians and the Muslims from Zionism.
Is it fair assessment if you're somebody who's supporting this? Because we're saying on one end here that all human life is precious. We're saying now that we are on the side of justice, truth. And if somebody who's supporting this, is it safe to say that, because a lot of masks are coming off, we're getting to see really like kind of what's in people's hearts. And when you see that, human rights organizations, Amnesty International, even Israeli human rights organizations, they've labeled this apartheid.
Yeah.
So nobody would be on the side of apartheid South Africa. But when Jimmy Carter, Nelson Mandela, now they have, at one time he was considered a terrorist. Yeah. Now they have his statue in the UK. Right. Is it right? That's interesting. So now you want to be on the right side of history. So you have a lot of rabbis, Jews coming forward, saying not in our name. Mm-hmm. And if somebody's insisting, and they'll insist, and they'll still be with this, even though the evidence is overwhelming, you know, you have the international UN and other organizations saying this is these are an oppressed people. This is what is it, occupied lands.
Yeah.
Okay, so my question is now, can you really question it? Is somebody really who supports this? And then I had just one more point. I had a rabbi who I just interviewed, Rabbi David. And he relates an amazing story. So he's 19 years old. He's like been sold this Disney dream like of Israel, and he goes there. And what really kicked it off for him was that he saw this young boy. Mm. He was hurt. He was bleeding from his hand. So he took him to the proper authorities there. He's like, get him some help. And he's fluent in Hebrew. So he's telling him Hebrew, like, let's help this boy. And then the soldiers, the police, they looked at him and said, get this Arab out of here. So I was like, imagine someone said, get this N-word out of here.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's what it's about. And it's not a one-off, he said. This
no,
this was something
systematic.
That's it's just something yeah. that's normal. So are you racist now? Is this something that's coming out? If you support something like this, can we question? Are you somebody who's for equal rights for all? Are you really for humanity? Or are you really... are you an undercover racist?
Yeah, no, I think 100%.
Is that a legit question?
Yeah, no, it is. I think if you're a Zionist at this point, you're a racist. I think that's a foregone conclusion.
Oh, there's no doubt with you. That's
it. No, I think that's it. I think whether you admit it or not, that's a secondary issue. But, you know, and I'll give people, you know, benefit of the doubt who have been indoctrinated. Like you said, a lot of people, you know, and the government of Israel has worked really hard to keep that sort of hermetic seal on the indoctrination. You know, they've got the summer camps and they've got the birthright tours and they've got all these sorts of things that they just, like you said, the Disney fairy tale that they feed you about all of Israel is. If anybody hasn't watched it, Israelism, it was a really nice documentary.
What's it called?
Israelism.
That was developed by a Jew also, right?
Yes, it was.
These
yeah.
are Jews putting this
yeah,
together.
No,
we commend them.
Because exactly what you're saying, I heard someone say, and I don't know if it's an exaggeration, but it's telling. They said, every Jew is a Zionist until they actually go.
Mm.
To Israel and or Palestine, and they see like the reality, right? And at that point, it's a moral choice that people have to make. And this is why Allah says in the Quran, it's not the eyes that are blind, but it's the hearts. There are people who have their hearts are awake and alive, and they see the reality, and they're like, and they become very disillusioned. Some of them, they go and they hide and they just go about their lives, and they just like, wow, it's like, it's just whatever. But others take it even a step further and found these organizations such as Jewish Voice for Peace and other organizations and say that, no, we are going to educate the world. We're going to show people what's really going on. And we're going to try to put a stop to it because they realize that they had been indoctrinated for their whole lives.
My guest recently, Sammy Hamdi.
Yeah.
He said
we had
something
breakfast together this morning, mashallah.
Yeah, he said something very interesting. He said that, look, we could sympathize for the beginning.
Yes.
What started Zionism.
Yes.
And it wasn't the persecution of Jews by Muslims. It was actual persecution by who?
By the Nazis and Europe.
And the Christians.
And historically, Christians. That's the only thing. If you want to go back 1,000 years,
there's no disrespect to the...
No disrespect to anybody, but let's be honest. If you're going to go down that route,
yeah.
check your own, under your own fingernails.
Mm-hmm.
Because the history of Christianity and Christians towards Jews in the last 1,000 years is not pretty. It is not pretty. Whether you go to Russia and Eastern Europe, whether you go to Western Europe, the pogroms, language has changed. You know, mm-hmm. genocide is a fairly recent term, but all these things that they have names for that they now weaponize in an unfair way, such as blood libel and these sorts of things. You know, this was systematic in Christian history towards mm-hmm. Jews, right? The dehumanization, the animalistic language, you know, calling them rats and
horrible.
Know,
this
horrible
is
things.
Horrible.
But that's the history of Christianity. And well, let's say Christians.
According to Islam, unacceptable.
Unacceptable.
And you're an imam. I want people to understand this. I want the Michelle Bachmans and the Christian conservatives and whoever's watching. You're actually a Muslim imam. That's like a priest. That's like a pastor. That's like, you know, that's a community leader for
yes.
the Muslims.
Yes.
So now you really did your homework. I mean, to come. And this is another fascinating thing. You're a former Christian who became a Muslim imam.
Yeah.
That's really deep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So continue on.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just like this is the history of Christians towards Jews. and the Nazi Holocaust against the Jews was simply the last chapter of Jewish oppression in Christian Europe. The history is deep and long. So if you wanna, any conservative wants to go back 1,000 years, I will put the reputation of the Muslims anywhere from Morocco to Indonesia. I'll compare that, put it up against the European Christian treatment of Jews for the last 1,000 years. I will give you every single dollar in my bank account that I have to my name. I'll stake my reputation on it. I'll stake my life on it. I will challenge you. Show me what Christians have done to Jews in the last 1,000 years, and show me what Muslims have done to Jews in the last 1,000 years. And you will have to face the facts that Christianity, and especially European Christians, have had a very checkered history with the Jewish population, the Jewish community, and the relationship between Muslims and Jews has been much more amicable and much more mutually supportive. When the Jews were pushed out of, because the Jews were pushed out of Andalusia, of southern Spain, before the Muslims were, when they quote unquote unified Spain, the Jews were the first to be kicked out. Forced conversion, Spanish Inquisition. Who sent ships on his own dime to go save the Jews from Muslim Spain, or formerly Muslim Spain?
On their own dime.
On their own dime. It was the Ottoman Sultan Bayezid II.
Wow.
He sent ships, I believe, this is in the late 1400s. So, the numbers, you don't know exactly how many numbers, but somewhere between 150 to 300,000 Jews were taken back, saved, rescued. Refugees from Spain were taken to the Ottoman Empire, settled in Istanbul. And they actually now, there's still a strong Jewish presence in Istanbul to this day. There's actually organizations that I read a little bit about this in the last few weeks that document the history of the Jewish community in Turkey and in Istanbul in particular. And they say that, yeah, we were settled here. We were encouraged here. And the Ottoman Sultan Bayezid II blamed Ferdinand and Isabella for their short-sightedness. He said, "You've enriched me and impoverished yourself," when talking about how he came to save and to welcome the Jewish community from Spain, right? The Muslims were then the next to be kicked out. So, you could go, again, I'll stake everything I own on this. Compare European Christians' last 1,000 years, their behavior towards Jews, and Muslims' behavior towards Jews. I will stake everything on it. You will find that European Christians had a hard time dealing with Jews. They had a lot of animosity and hatred towards Jews. The whole Judeo-Christian values is a very, very new thing. It's a very, very new idea. If you go back into the history is ugly. It's honestly, it makes you sick to see how the Jews have been treated in Europe by Christians.
Not by Muslims, by Christians.
And the Nazi Holocaust was simply the last chapter in that story. So you can totally sympathize with the Jewish people when it comes to the raw deal that they got. But unfortunately, that was misdirected, that sort of oppression and the horrors that they endured was misdirected. And now it was taken out, just like if you have a bad day at work and then you come and you take it out on your wife or your kids. They came and they took it out on the Muslims and the Palestinians, attempting to establish some sort of imaginative, nation state that's just for them. It's a racist state. It's a Jewish state, right? And, it's ironic because the United States recently, the Congress passed that sort of, I don't know what technically the term, resolution or whatever, Israel as a Jewish state, without realizing that that's racist, period. To say that Israel is a Jewish state and must be and has the right to be a Jewish state in a land that is populated by not just Jews, but also by Christians and Muslims, right? If the role were reversed, if the shoe was on the other foot and there was a place where, let's say like Kenya, or let's say like some place in Africa that has like a population that's significant Muslim population, but also significant Jewish and Christian population, and they came out and they said that this is an Islamic state and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, everybody would be up in arms. Mm-hmm. You'd see it on the news 24/7, right? We're just asking people to be fair. Just be fair and don't lie. Be historical about it. The 1,000-year animosity is between Christians and Jews, not between Muslims and Jews.
So you gave some example. You had the Spain, golden ages for Jews, and I just had a rabbi on recently. He also confirmed this. I mean, this is something that's just well-known, documented through history. Jews flourished the most at this time, didn't they?
Yeah, of course.
You had
course.
France.
Every time the Christians were in charge of the Holy Land, we're talking about Palestine,
yeah.
The Jews were kicked out and not allowed to settle there.
Say that again. So every
time that Christians were in charge of the Holy Land.
Jerusalem?
Yes. Jerusalem,
Jews were
Palestine,
kicked out.
Jews were kicked out and not allowed to live there.
Not by Muslims.
Not by Muslims. The opposite. When Muslims were in charge,
they repopulated.
They repopulated and Jews were allowed to come and settle.
Yeah,
this is a historical fact. You can go look it up.
Yeah,
like you know, the best thing for Judaism has been Islam. When it talks about the Jewish community and its ability to survive as a community, the best ally that the Jews have had historically have been the Muslims.
Yeah, you've had Islam save the jury. You've had David Warnstein and other academics. I often always quote this because it's very important. In Bosnia, you had, so where my family's from, you had the Muslims there hiding the Jews in the Kaaba.
You had Muslims here in Sarajevo, in Bosnia, that they were actually helping. Talk to you about that history. They were helping to save the Jews, going to the extent of even putting them in the Kaaba, wearing the Islamic dress. Is that?
Yes. During the World War II, the Muslims and the Bosniaks people in Sarajevo, in the whole Bosnia and Herzegovina, are protecting the Jews wearing the niqab, especially niqab.
Muslims would put this on the Jews.
To hide in his house.
So the Nazis wouldn't kill them.
Yes.
To protect the Jews from the Nazis.
I don't know if you know about that. They were hiding them in niqab. You mentioned Turkey, France. The forging of documents has happened a lot.
Yeah.
So the Nazis couldn't get them. To pretend that like they were Muslim, giving mm-hmm. them mm-hmm. from the mosque, you know about this, right?
Yeah.
So there's so many countless examples, and then so when Michelle Bachman, she's pushing this these lies out there. It's dangerous stuff.
It's very dangerous. It's just as dangerous as Genocide Joe telling everybody that the Palestinians killed babies, beheaded babies, and then somebody comes and stabs a 6-year-old. It's just as dangerous.
So the Quran tells us. I mean, and we don't have a problem. You agree now if anything is confirmed, because you're following the Quran, the verbatim word of God Almighty, where Allah, the Creator, God Almighty, in Arabic, in Aramaic, it's interesting that Jesus would say Allah.
Oh, interesting.
Right? So you say Allah in Arabic, Allah is the Creator, Allah. Mm-hmm. And now when you look at it and you see that, okay, the Creator is telling us that if an untrustworthy person comes to us, verify, check it up. News comes to you.
Yeah, of course.
Don't just accept it blindly.
No,
go and verify it. So the sources for many of these things are people who've been exposed for lying.
Yeah, right? No, definitely. It's you can't trust anything that the IDF says at this point. They've been caught lying so many times. And I believe Christopher Hitchens has like a nice write-up on who has done journalistic work there and about how the amount and the audacity of the lies actually like takes you aback, right? It's actually surprising. Like most people would feel shame to lie so frequently about and so systematically about such big things. Even if, whatever side, quote unquote, that you support, just think in a context of war, do you believe what the governments are going to put out about themselves? Everybody knows that in the context of war, they call it the fog of war. This is all propaganda.
But atrocity propaganda.
It is atrocity propaganda, right? And so we've seen that, many people have remarked that CNN and MSNBC and Fox News, they've become stenographers for the IDF. They literally just, whatever they're handed, they pass it off as if it's fact. And that's not journalism. In fact, one of the things that we've seen, and this is another thing where the average American person understands, that we do not have a free press. That we say legally, the protections in the Bill of Rights that we have a free press, but de facto, the reality on the ground is that our legacy media, our mainstream media, is occupied territory by major corporations that are influenced by foreign nations, and we do not actually have a free press. The closest thing that we have to free press is the information that's able to be like shared freely on Twitter and social media, which is why the people who are younger, who get their news from Twitter and social media, have a very, very different take on things than people who are relying on traditional mass media, right? So, we have to listen. It's like people don't understand, and people are going to try again. And I say this, and everybody has to pay attention to this and be aware of this. People are going to try to paint you and me as traitors. People are going to try to paint you and me as anti-American. It's going to be the McCarthy era all over again. They're going to paint us as terrorist supporters or terrorist sympathizers or whatever. We care about the United States of America, and we care about it doing the right thing. We want redemption. We do not want to see the United States government or the politicians or the media in the pocket of a foreign country. That is something that every American can agree to, except for probably a handful of cynical people, that we want the free flow of information. We don't want wartime propaganda from one side. We don't want to be lied to. We don't want our government to be lied to, or our politicians be handed propaganda from a foreign nation and get up and announce it as if it's fact.
Yeah.
This is absolutely ridiculous. It's inexcusable. And any society that's based on such lies is destined to fall. And I don't want it to fall. I want it to improve, right?
I think Carl Tuckerson, you heard of him?
Yeah.
I think he'd agree with you. I think he was speaking almost identical.
Yeah.
That he's saying, you know, all these issues that are happening at home, we're sending all this money and putting these other things ahead of,
of course,
home base.
Right. But people will try to put you and me in jail for supporting terrorism because we're Muslims, whereas Tucker Carlson's safe.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, America has to reconcile with that as well. Why? Yeah. People are going to weaponize and attempt to use these things in order to silence critics and to silence critique. And they have to reconcile themselves to the fact that when you critique your own country and your own homeland, it's because we want it to be better. It's because we actually care. That if we didn't care about it, if we didn't want it to be better, we would just be silent about this. But we're raising our heads and we're putting ourselves at risk because we don't think that it should go on this way. Mm-hmm. That we need to do better. We have to do better. And the longevity of this country depends on it doing better.
So some of these things, these grotesque things that are put out there. I was looking at some investigative journalists. You have, I don't know if you heard of the Gray Zone.
Yeah.
And other independent journalists. They were uncovering that some of these relief organizations
are coming from disaster relief groups that are fighting for media attention and charitable donations. These groups are in the business of raising money. And right now, atrocity fundraising is a gold rush. Very wealthy and very emotional Jewish Westerners are opening up their wallets to organizations and charities. And these organizations are jockeying for position as the best charity to give money to. And nothing raises money like a good story. For example, Eli Beer, the president of United Hatzalah, went on a media tour around the United States, telling audiences that babies were placed in ovens and baked to death.
A little baby in an oven. They put them in, these bastards put these babies in an oven and put on the oven. We found the kid a few hours later.
This propelled him and his organization to the forefront of the media for several days, earning tons of awareness for his organization's work. He was able to leverage this media attention into several fundraisers where he managed to collect a whopping $50 million. Israeli reporter Ishay Cohen investigated and determined that the story wasn't true. Another Israeli journalist, Chaim Lenenson, had this to say about Eli Beer and the bullshit oven story. Like any good Jew who sees the rich, he thought about the money and told a story that does not exist.
That we're repeating some of these things that were debunked with the babies in ovens and the mutilating of bodies. And it's a really just disgusting thing that obviously, if it's true,
we condemn it.
100%.
But we're not going to believe the IDF when they say that these things happened.
So this is something that obviously is something that Islam condemns, we would condemn. But what was interesting is that these relief organizations, I don't know if they're classified relief organizations, these people were repeating this. And they were repeating this atrocity propaganda. And what was happening, the more they were repeating it, the more money was coming in. So they uncovered that at the end, it was debunked.
Mm.
But they made $49
million. There you go. Follow the money. Follow the money.
$49 million.
There's money to be made in the weapons industry, which is why people, and this is something that President Eisenhower, when he was leaving office in the 50s, I believe, he warned the United States about the military-industrial complex. There's money to be made in weapons. There's money to be made in tragedy. There's money to be made in these ludicrous claims, right? But at the end of the day, the truth has to prevail. We have to speak the truth. And the people that are trying to stop us from speaking the truth, they want to keep the money train coming. They just want to keep on lining their pockets and making money off of these things.
Okay, last video here is by the same former congresswoman, and I want to get your interpretation of this.
It's time
time that Gaza ends, the 2 million people who live there, they are clever assassins. They need to be removed from that land. That land needs to be turned into a national park.
Politicians like that,
how would you interpret that?
I don't believe that politicians like that actually believe that. I believe that they don't have any values, that they're just snakes that try to play to an audience and whip up a crowd.
But how can she be? She's a dean at a Christian, Christian university.
Listen, one of the things that pushed me to Islam, I think it was in 2006, and there was escalation in Palestine around that time. And in the church that I used to go to, the pastor gave a sermon about why we have to support Israel against the Palestinians. And I asked her after, you know, I went up to her, I said, how could you possibly say that? Like, I don't, like, this doesn't make any sense. And she said to me, well, the Jews believe in the same God that we do and Muslims don't. Now, that's someone with a master's degree from a divinity school. And I was a teenager and I knew that this person has no idea what they're talking about. So you can have all your pomp and circumstance. You can have all your degrees. You can have all your institutions. It doesn't reflect quality. It doesn't reflect truth. Right. And actually, there's an entire system of this fluff that passes as scholarship, that passes as, you know, as rigor, that in reality, it's just a castle made of sand.
I think it's very important that Christians really look into this a little further with this con man who, and I had a pastor, and I think we touched upon this last time, but I think it's so important. This con man, Cyrus Schofield, who learned from someone who knew John Nelson Darby. He got all these fringe teachings from Christianity. It got supported by the Zionist organization. They printed this in the Oxford Printing Press. They pushed this Cyrus Schofield reference Bible into I think, a million copies for free. And then this is what is the modern day now with the interpretation of certain verses, connecting it to Israel, like this is right. The bread and butter. Whoever blesses thee is blessed. Yes. Whoever curses thee is cursed. The
modern day Israel with classical Old Testament
that,
Israel.
That the Jews have to be in Israel for the second coming of Jesus, the rapture. 1,800 years of Christianity had nothing to say about this. Is all false.
Yeah.
This is fake prophecy pushing is something that's not really part of authentic whatever you have of the true teachings of Christianity. This is false.
And that's an important point why religious literacy is important. Some people, they make the mistake and they say, oh, you religious guys, you know, you guys are all responsible for violence and stuff like that. And it's actually the opposite. If you don't have good religious scholarship, look at what comes about.
Christians need to know this, so they don't feel guilty not supporting this. This has nothing to do with their religion, actually.
No,
they check this up. Yeah.
You just need to actually follow your faith and not follow the modern ideologies that pretend to be representatives of your faith.
Last question before we conclude. What did it for you that you actually accepted Islam? There's a common push out there now within conservatives, and I commend them for that, to have more kids, family, and that. Mm-hmm. Because they feel like, okay, Muslims are having more kids, and they think that's why Islam is growing. But you're an example of Islam is growing because people have investigated, were sincerely looking for the truth, and asked the Creator, the heavens and the earth, God Almighty, to guide them, and you're one of those. What did it for you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, two things. I think one that's like methodological is that I just always, I investigate. You know, I don't take people for their word. If it comes to, we're talking nation states or anybody else, I read and I study, and I try to understand. Right. So if somebody is going to come to me and tell me that the 2 million people in Gaza are all assassins or mercenaries, I'm going to go investigate that. I'm not going to believe that. Right. Because I'm not stupid. Right. And I know that people lie and people have agendas and people are paid by people, etc. And then the second thing, once I went through the process of sort of investigating about Islam, I found that Islam was the only religion, faith, system, whatever you want to call it, that had guidance for every aspect of human life. That it had guidance for, you know, how to use the bathroom, how to structure an economy, how to conduct a business contract, how to treat your family, how to leave your inheritance behind, right? Things that, you know, honestly, Christianity doesn't have, right? Christianity has a lot of things that has to do with being a good person, treating people right, and these sorts of, you know, personal qualities, but it doesn't have much of a vision for society. And it doesn't have, and it, historically, that's not what the disciples were concerned with. They were an oppressed minority. They were getting slaughtered by the Romans, right? They weren't thinking about how to build and how to govern, right? So that's why there's basically nothing there in Christianity to instruct you how to govern. And then, you know, other sort of non-religious ideologies, you know, they talk a lot about politics and economy and things like that, but they're not going to make you into a better person. They're not going to make you into a more generous person, a more honorable person, a more virtuous person, a kinder person. And Islam is the only faith system, whatever you want to say, that combines both. It will both guide you how you should structure your individual life, your family life, your community, your society, your economy, everything.
Beautiful. A complete system, way of life.
Yeah.
And all built on the worship of how many gods?
Just one.
Just one. Yeah. Can that be three in one or one in three, five
no,
in three? Just
no fancy mathematics or...
when you say one, that's it.
We actually mean one.
Pure yeah. monotheism.
Not one. We yeah. mean real one.
Pure monotheism. Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Eddie, always a pleasure. May Allah bless you.
You too. Assalamu alaikum. Thanks.
If you're like me, you've been watching The Dean Show for now almost 20 years. Allah preserve our man, Eddie, and continue his work. Allah has opened for him a new door. We went from The Dean Show to The Dean Center, which is going to be in Florida. And I've been rooting for this project. I support it. I urge you to support it too. We know this brother and his work. He's got a track record that speaks for itself. This center is going to be successful, inshallah, as successful as the show is, and all his other dawah works. Go to the website, support it, and we look forward to seeing more good news coming out of there.
I cannot leave without giving you a gift. If you're not yet Muslim and you're tuning in to see what these Muslims are talking about and you like a free copy of the Quran, go ahead and visit thedeanshow.com. We'll take care of the postage and everything and get it delivered to you. And if you still have some questions about Islam, call us at 1-800-662-4752. We'll see you next time. Until then, peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.